Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Protests continue in Ferguson and around the country following the announcement last week that a grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, decided not to indict the white officer Darren Wilson in the death of Michael Brown, a teenager who was black and unarmed. And now President Obama is intervening, asking Congress for $263 million worth of body cameras, better training for police, and a task force to bridge the gap between effective policing and building public trust of law enforcement. Attorney General Eric Holder is also issuing new guidelines for limiting racial profiles by authorities. There's a lot going on about this issue, and it brings up an important question. Should this country rein in its police force? And if so, how? We want to hear from you. I really do want to hear from you on this. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us online, and you can see all the ways to do that at wamc.org/voxpop, 1-800-348-2551. I just ask one thing, and that is, look, this is a tough question, and it has many facets to it and many sides. So I ask that when you call, you maintain a law of civility. Okay? That sounds fair. Let's go to John in Kingston. John in Kingston, you're on.
Thank you, Dr. Chartok. Yes, a civilian review of police efforts when there's questionable situations with complete transparency. I mean, complete transparency. And the body cameras, I think, will eliminate any guesswork because pictures tell the story.
Right. And we know that from Rodney King. We know that where there's a picture, there's no question as to what's going on. Otherwise, you know, I think the presumption goes, frankly, to the police officer. Don't you, John?
I think everything favors the police officer at this time. The way they're armed, how they approach things. I think better training and cameras, maybe we could do without so many police officers. And if liberty and justice and truth or our freedom was in place, we wouldn't really have much of a need for such a vast law enforcement organization. Those values were never in place to begin with.
That's an interesting
look at our history.
Yeah, interesting point. You know, I taught a class the other day, and this was a couple of my students were telling me that they had gotten cameras in their cars. And they're not expensive. They're like $50 each. And they loop so that, you know, you plug them into your electric supply and they go around and round. And I had the feeling, although it wasn't specifically stated, that they were talking about what would happen, you know, if they were stopped. And one kid said to me, all you have to do is press your record button on your iPhone. I said, yeah, that'd go over well.
Yeah, you know, I bet.
If you're being stopped. Okay, John, great call. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Let's go to Paul in North Adams. Okay, Paul, you're on.
Hey, I'd just like to say that we are the government, so to me it's not an issue of big government because we're supposed to be the government. So I'm fine with police wearing cameras. I've personally been told I can go wherever I want, do anything I want, and make your life miserable. And that's by the state police here in the Commonwealth.
I'm sorry, Paul. I'm not exactly following you. You've been told that you can go anywhere you want.
No, the state police in Massachusetts have told me I can go anywhere I want, do anything I want, and make your life miserable if I want.
Well, you
and
know,
so cameras are a good thing, I think. It keeps everybody honest. And if I may, I'd also just like to make a comment. Earlier in the day, I heard someone mention the possibility of police, if they have to use a weapon, to shoot to wound. That goes against the laws of inertia and physics. You know, a bullet just won't stop if it hits flesh. It's going to keep right on going and hurt an innocent bystander. So that just won't work.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think your point, look, this deserves a little discussion here, Paul. The idea that police, we give police the right to use bodily force, right? I mean, we
yes,
do
sir.
That.
Yes, and, sir.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And they are really, when you think about it, the only ones who have it. I mean, there are Second Amendment rights, right? But that's not the same thing as a police officer who, and they have a very, very difficult job. I mean, I taught policemen, and believe me, I heard some stories that made my hair stand up on top of my head. So we have to, and we have to be supportive. On the other hand, police organizations tend to band together. And they tend to support each other. I remember I mentioned it once before, but I remember being riding around in a patrol car when I was working with the New York City Police Department as a sort of academic observer. And they announced that an officer was down in lower Manhattan. And guys were coming in from the Bronx, you know. And then there's a sergeant at either end of the street waving them off. There's a real solidarity in police, in policing. And so that enters into it also. Paul, thank you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I support the police. If they have to use severe force, then they have to shoot to kill. Well, because otherwise that bullet's just going to go and hit somebody else.
There are an awful lot of people who think that the Lone Ranger was the model who could shoot the gun out of your hand. They can't.
Oh, no, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's,
hey, Paul, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it. Yep.
Thank you, Alan.
Right. Let's go to Judy in Schenectady. Judy, you're on.
All right. I have been hearing a lot about the difficult jobs police officers have.
Right, they do, don't they?
I agree, but I am a non-profit worker in Hamilton Hill in Schenectady who works primarily with gangs, homeless kids, street kids, etc. I face these issues, and I'm 73, by the way.
Yeah, it's a very
daily.
familiar age.
I work in the streets daily. I try to stop gangs from fighting. There's just big issues. Many people do work that is equally demanding and I face danger daily. I don't even think about it anymore.
Okay, now, Judy, your point is?
My point is that, you mean in terms of cameras?
Well, no, you're making a telephone call, and you are saying, okay, I want to make a comment. I work, my job is very hard, and I respect it tremendously, is very hard. Okay.
What I'm saying is my job on a daily basis is as difficult as a police officer who would stand by nonprofit people if they were to shoot an unarmed teenager.
Mm-hmm.
What if I came to work with a gun?
Mm-hmm. But you don't, and because the government doesn't give you the right to do that.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that we should expect the same kind of civility from our police officers that we expect from anyone who works in a difficult situation.
Gotcha, Judy. Good comment. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Let's go to Norman in Great Barrington. Hello, Norman. You're on.
I think that we have to consider the profound effect that the Supreme Court decision on the Second Amendment has had on the police. It has made them very defensive. The country is awash with not only guns, but military guns. And when the police go out, they are targets. I think, therefore, that it's necessary to look at their training, to look at the psychological testing that is done for recruits, but also we're not going to solve the problem unless we start putting a brake on the number of guns in our society.
Okay, with that in mind, Norman, you made your point, but with that in mind, the Supreme Court has spoken on that issue. And I couldn't agree with you more about the need to lessen the number of guns in society. But assuming things are going to stay as they are for a while, would you put cameras on every cop?
I don't see anything wrong with putting cameras on cops.
Okay. Can you think of any reason not to do it?
No.
Uh-huh. Okay. Norman, thanks for the call. Appreciate it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to Barry in Warwick. Barry, I tell you what, Barry, we have to take a break. So can you stay right where you are and we'll come right back to you, okay?
Sure, no problem.
Okay.
Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild, offering environmental, outdoor education, and living history programs for schools. AshokanCenter.org. And H. Houst & Son, True Value Hardware, Woodstock, locally owned since 1932, offering holiday decorations and gifts for kitchen, workshop, and home. Behind every project is a True Value. HHoust.com.
And we are back, and we have Barry on the line with us. Barry, you go.
How are you doing? I just wanted to address your intro to the show where you said that you know, we could use cameras for the police in hopes of preventing other incidents like Ferguson, Missouri.
Yep.
And my point is, the way you said that, it makes me think, like, geez, is he saying, like, you know, if the cops are wearing a camera, that cop wouldn't have taken a shot? Or I didn't know what you meant by that.
No. The point of the matter is, I preface that, I think you remember, by saying that when there is a debate on whether something should have happened or couldn't have happened or what really happened, it is better to have the camera, because otherwise the presumption always is that the police are right. Isn't that right?
I agree with you. I missed before that intro. I turned it on right when I heard you saying that. And I was it kind of sounds like you're like agreeing. Like, I just want people to get an idea saying, yeah, you know, if that cop had the camera on, he wouldn't have shot him. You know,
I think
he still would have shot him. It would have justified it a lot better in everybody else's eyes to be able to see what he saw.
Well, yes, assuming that what he saw is
correct. If what he says during this testimony was correct, then, you know, it would back him up. And
Barry,
at the same time, more than anything else, though, it just seems like it's more of a like people not taking responsibility for themselves. You know, there was a similar incident in New York City where some young kid was robbing like pizza parlors in New York City.
Yep.
And he'd always say, hey, come with change for $100. Well, the pizza place got robbed four times. They said, okay, we're going to call the cops. The cops sent two detectives. The detectives brought the pizza to the kid, robbed him. The cops ended up shooting him and killing the kid. And the people down there in this apartment complex rioted, you know, pretty much. It was a small incident, but they in their area, they rioted and said, oh, you killed that boy, you this, you that.
Okay, like, but Barry, I want to ask you a question. That's fine, but let me ask you a question.
Again, can you taking personal responsibility, though, doesn't seem like people want to do these days.
Can you give me a reason not to put cameras on cops?
No, I don't. I think it's a good idea. I think it just helped them justify what they do.
Okay. Barry, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We got one phone being used right now. The other four are open. So if you want to call, and I hope you will, well, then there's three. And if you want to call, now's the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. Almost no waiting. Let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, welcome.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm okay. I was thinking a lot about this. I have stories to tell, which I'm not going to.
Why are you teasing us?
Why am I teasing you? It's my nature.
Okay, go ahead.
But anyway, I think that what we need truly is to look at our ethics in this society, our values, our myths. We have spent so much money on building weapons. It just is seemingly...
Okay, no, I don't think there's a person out there, Abigail, who doesn't agree with you. And the previous call, we have to take personal responsibility. We have to question our ethics. But right now, today, in order to stop this kind of division between people on all sides, what should we do today? Today.
Well, one of the things, the cameras are okay, but then again, digital film can be whatever film.
Okay, yeah. Every cure has a potential.
Basically,
yeah.
It has to do with educating again and again. I worked for the prison system back in 1980 when Cuomo was expanding the system. Although I didn't work with the prisoners, I worked with the correction officers.
Right.
And I went in about two times a week, whatever. In truth, it was the more pay I ever received in my life. I mean, it was an astronomical sum of money for me. And so anyway, so I spent 3 hours for 6 weeks, however it went. And I attempted, it was supposed to be test-taking skills, speed reading and test-taking skills. And what I did was I attempted to build up the self-esteem of the people who were taking the test. I was so, I had so much cognitive dissonance concerning my desire to earn money, to work, and yet I was working for a system that I really was a little...
Okay, but Abigail, we have to get to the point because there are four people now behind you.
I understand that.
So your point is we need to change. We need to change consciousness.
Yes.
Who could not agree with that? And yet we are faced with something now. The president goes to the White House and says, I'm going to give them the money for the cameras on the cops.
I think that no money should be given. I mean, we have enough weapons. I don't think we need cameras. I think they need one being out in the streets, being kind to each other.
Okay. No, we.
Century. What can I tell you?
Believe me, we got your point. I thank you for your call. Thank you, Abigail.
My pleasure. Okay. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess the story is whether or not cops should have
cameras.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They feel. I think they have too much power, and they get nervous. But they can use their power. And I'm also wondering why they have to shoot to kill.
Well, because that's the rule. You shoot to kill.
Well, they shouldn't do that.
They shouldn't do it. Okay, shouldn't, couldn't, wouldn't, shmouldn't.
Well, fix that. You know, it can be fixed.
Yeah. Well, they can. You can make differences in the manuals and the way that you train police. But I think a lot has to do with how you train police and who you take on your force.
Absolutely. And I think the job can attract certain personalities as well.
I get it, and I certainly agree with that. I taught police. Many of them were really great, good thinkers, and but there was really a blue line. I mean, it was that easy. Lynn, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Right. Let's go to Don in Stone Ridge. Okay, Don, you're on.
Hi, it's Dan.
Oh, so sorry, Dan. Yeah, go ahead.
No trouble at all. Alan, I'm listening to all this, and I'm a big supporter of police. I remember back to 2001, you know, and the response that our first responders got at the World Trade Center as being heroes. And every day we have heroes across this country.
Yep.
And nobody has done any kind of an actuarial analysis of what the risk of the problem is. How many unwarranted deaths occur every year in medicine, in hospitals, with doctors, with ambulances, any other kinds of things. And with a million responses a day that the police across the country make, we have one incident or two incidents or three incidents, and the risk is extremely low, and these police are doing a great job. Our crime rates have plummeted.
Listen, Dan, I think you're making a very good point. On the other hand, there is a problem. There is a perception in our minority communities that the police stop them while walking, while driving, that if you're black, get back. And to some degree, because of economic determinism, if you want to use that, that there is a big problem in this country. And there is a suspicion that is bona fide. People really believe it. Why wouldn't we put a camera on a cop?
What is the law of unintended consequences?
All right, go ahead.
And what will happen?
All right.
And are there incidents where policeman or a law enforcement officer will not respond or not respond appropriately to preserve the safety of the greater population?
Yep.
Because that camera is there.
Now, I love that term, the greater population, because that's exactly what this is about. This is about the perception on the part of many people that black people, for example, are treated very badly, smacked around, pushed against the fence, and if you had stopped irrationally, and if you had a camera on the cop, that wouldn't happen. That's not the law of unintended consequences, right? I mean, I hear you, and first of all, I really appreciate your call. I do, because, you know, I get what you're saying. On the other hand, I'm still not hearing a good reason that we don't hold people accountable for what they're doing. Look, we all know that there are policemen who go around slap people around, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They have decided, as the judge, jury, and executioner, that they have the right to do that and that they are protecting the greater community. That's also true. But they're not the judge, and they're not the court. I know one cop who always used to say to people, look, I kept you out of jail. I did this for you. I did that for you. And thought that the community owed him rather than the legal system.
I can certainly accept that. And I'm not saying the cameras are not right, but I think they need to be. It needs to be looked at as to what will be the unintended consequences.
No, I hear you. I think the law of unintended consequences is and I've been examining my mind on that one, doing a survey as to what could happen. And, you know, as a cop is told, look, every single thing you do could lead to the end of your job if you're not careful. And that they might not take that extra step, which would be protective of, as you say, the greater community, but as the people who are part of the lesser community get very upset by.
And when I say the greater community, I'm certainly not referring on a racial basis. It's simply on who's the thug and who is not the thug.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
boy,
mm-hmm.
And I see the thug as being the lesser community.
Okay. Hey, that's terrific. Thank you very much for your call. It's a very important call, and I appreciate it. You made some very salient points. Thanks again.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to David in Herkimer, where they have diamonds. David, you're on.
Hi. I don't know how many cops you've actually had calling.
No, we haven't.
I'm retired.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you got one now.
Great.
27 years, retired state trooper.
Great.
And I don't think there's a problem with having a camera on a cop. Now, I've been retired a few years, so my era was cameras in the cars
right. On
traffic stops and being mic'd up. I knew that camera was there. If I stepped in the big pile, that was my fault. But I also think, from another vantage point, that it's also going to cut down on frivolous claims by people against the police.
Yep.
You know, and it will also probably given a different perspective in what's happening in Ferguson right now, if there was a camera on Michael Brown. You know, all you have is the cop's word and many varying statements from witnesses that go from pro-cop to anti-cop. Some people would lie, some people, it's given, and you probably know, that a story will change 10 times down the line when it goes from person to person to person. You can't, but I think
David,
it gets very... Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question because I love the fact, first of all, I love the fact that you're calling. I appreciate it more than I can say, number one. Number two, can you give us any incident that happened when the camera was on you when you're making a traffic stop or when you're questioning somebody that may have made a difference?
There was never a personnel complaint made against me per se. One individual, I was working on the interstate, speeding by 85, and not me, the car was. Green car from Canada, Ontario, plates tinted out windows that were reflective, so I couldn't see in the car. I turned around, caught up to the car. I drove up next to it to make sure that it was the tinted out windows that I'd seen, pulled it over. And it was a black male from Canada.
Is that against the law, by the way, David, tinted out windows?
Yes.
New York?
Yes. Yeah, you have to have at least 70% of the light be able to pass through so you can see into the car.
Isn't that
interesting?
And
the troop cars that I drove, and they're probably still the same, were at 73%.
Okay.
So you can tell, you can almost see clearly into the car.
Right.
And most cars aren't like that. It's a minor violation, but it's an officer safety issue, and I know you can understand that.
I certainly
Anyways,
can.
Anyways, the gentleman accused me of pulling over because he was black. Well, you couldn't see inside the car, so of course that wasn't true. So after I wrote him his ticket, I said, well, if you want to make a personnel complaint, my sergeant's at the station, who also happens to be black. And at which point he said, well, he's probably an Uncle Tom, and left. So I offered him every opportunity to make a complaint.
David, is there a difference between the quality of our state troopers and the quality of local deputies and policemen?
Only in the probably in the training, and that really boils down to money. The state police, well, at the time I went through in 1987, it was over $100,000 for my training. That includes my salary. Mm-hmm. But the uniforms, training, everything that went along with it. Local municipalities, I mean, I started on a four-man police department in Old Fort. So they really didn't have a lot of money. I had three uniforms, had to supply my own equipment. So I think there's a difference in money that's available.
Well, does that result in better personnel?
Well, personnel is all in the choosing process. I think the state police, and I'm not saying they're a better organization, but they are more in-depth psychological profiles, interviews, background checks,
yep.
Where on a local police department, you may have known somebody all their life and decided, well, they'd be good for this job.
Yeah.
You know, and it wouldn't be any big background because people have known a local person all their life.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's about what it boils down to. My other thing is, and this also probably boils down to money, would be a lack of supervision on the road.
Sure.
You know, they don't, they can't, well, especially with the state police, you know, they don't have the personnel to go out there. And in such a large jurisdiction, I would be in a county sometimes just two troopers. And there's no way a sergeant can drive around and go on every call that you go on and show up. Or it is easier in a city or a smaller municipality.
Yeah, I got to tell you, but police officers have tremendous, power. I remember I've told this story once time too many of going up to Binghamton and having. I was a kid. Now I'm 73 now, so it's a long time ago. A state police police officer pulled me over. I had a car full of kids, all going up to visit their girlfriends and boyfriends in Binghamton, and the police officer, the trooper, said, "Where'd you get this car?" And I said. I said, "It's mine." He said, "No, it can't be because you have Hunter College on the back of it." And he said, "That's a girls' school." I said, "Not since 1956." He took that all right. And he said, "Okay, go well." When one guy who was really quite crazy put his head out the window and offered an obscenity to the police officer, in which case the police officer said, "Follow me back to the station." Well, you know, I pleaded with the guy and told him we were all anxious to see all these people and this kid was crazy and I'm never going to take him again. And sure enough, he said, "Okay, go ahead." Now, that was a major decision, right? I mean, he had the ability to make that decision right there and then because of the way he'd been talking.
I'd always found that it really surprised people if I said, and I did it on several occasions, and I'm not saying I'm the best thing since sliced bread, but, geez, I'm sorry I was wrong.
Uh-huh.
It seems to really surprise people when you do that. But it happens. But it's also a different time now than it was back then.
I would love
to go back to the days where maybe Joe at the bar, you caught him half a block away trying to get home and you gave him a ride.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's just such terrible things happening now that that's not a possibility.
David, I loved your call, and I appreciate your generosity in making it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, have a good day. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are going to take a very short break. We will be right back. So RJ and Larry and David and Richard, stay right there.
Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering weekend and week-long workshops for adults and teens in a farm setting. Registration now open for 2015 classes, snowfarm.org. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock and Rhinebeck, with local handcrafted, healthy and sustainable gifts, home goods and gourmet foods. Customized holiday gift baskets, too, on Facebook and SunflowerNatural.com.
Thank you, Zachary. And now let's go to David in Red Hook. David in Red Hook, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call and doing this Vox Pop thing. So as I'm on the phone waiting, I'm watching the videos online from the Guardian newspaper that show the Cleveland police shooting down this 12-year-old boy named Tamir Rice, who had a toy gun, and he was in a park. Probably heard about that. And then I watched the video of this guy in Walmart, also in Ohio, which is supposedly an open carry state where you're by law allowed to carry a weapon on your belt openly. And he's in there with a pellet gun in Walmart shopping, talking on the phone, and someone calls, just like the other cases, says whatever they say, which tells the police to go and get this guy. And in both instances, in both videos, the tactic that appears to be the training is roll up, ask no questions, and as soon as possible, shoot and kill them. That's what the video shows as what it looks like the policy is if they're following their training. And in both these cases, I'm wondering, my God, yeah, cameras would be great to have on these police just to have the truth be there. But regardless, the grand juries are still not going to indict officers because of all kinds of reasons that are political and yada, yada, yada. Unless the policy and the training changes, I don't think cameras are going to make a difference other than giving us all this more, you know, first-person shooter experience that we can all watch on the Internet, which is maybe going to be used in debate to argue, well, yeah, he had a gun. See, he's pointing it at them or whatever. Mm. But really, you know, in both these cases of these videos I watched in Walmart, I'm thinking, why didn't they just get on the PA system and say to the guy in aisle 12, hello, sir, in aisle 12 with the gun, is it real or not? Mm. Or, you know, talk to them before you fire to kill. It's obscene and just absolutely insane. And I can't believe that the grand jury in Ohio did not invite to indict these police officers for something. Just went up to him and shot him in an instant. They didn't give him a chance. He's on the audio. You can hear him saying, it's not real, but too late, they killed him. And there's no recourse. There's no justice. Whether rioting is justified, I don't know. You know, people are angry, they're upset. And I'm more afraid of police, especially veterans with combat experience joining domestic police forces, than I am of my fellow citizens. And I can't believe this open carry law is not respected by the police. Like, there's no, the policy is obviously not working.
Were both kids black?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't think that really matters because,
well, it matters a great deal if you're black.
Well, okay, sure. Let's say it matters. We can get sidetracked on that.
So sidetracked, because I think that's what that White House conference was about today.
Okay, so if what the conversation is about, these racist cops are gunning down black people, and that's the agenda, then that's that conversation. But I think that they're just following training and protocol, and even if it's a drunk white guy with a toy gun, he's still going to get gunned down.
Really?
He's a threat to whoever called on 911.
You think so? You think?
I haven't seen the videos yet.
Fascinating question. You really raise a fascinating question.
Why they could have in the park, and Tamir Rice could still be alive right now if they just parked their police car instead of rolling up right to where he's standing and shooting him. They could have parked their car and have a PA right on the police car and said, "Hello, sir, over there. Can you put that weapon down, please?"
You know,
and then just have a dialogue.
That was a puzzling one. It was a puzzling one.
So, it's great to have these, you know, retired troopers and other police officers call into Vox Pop and have this dialogue happen via the radio. It's so healthy. It's so needed. It's so important. I really appreciate it.
And I appreciate your call, David. I just want to get to everybody else. Thank you so much for calling.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Make some very good points. Okay, let's go to RJ in Cohoes. Okay, RJ, we're moving along real fast, so you got to go fast. Go ahead.
Okay, one problem I had with the Ferguson situation is it seemed like every policeman and woman on the force was white, and 70% of the citizens of that city were black. So they got to start making some kind of laws where the people who join the force have to live in the city. That's not going to solve all the problems, but that's certainly like a big problem. If the whole force is white and 70% of the citizens is black, I mean, come on.
Okay, RJ, a very good point. I mean, I think that there is a whole question about how you recruit. I do remember when Mario Cuomo was governor, there was a real push on to recruit more black troopers.
And it seems like the police unions fight against that kind of stuff, and that's not good. And also, the previous caller, I agree. Like, I grew up, you know, a long time ago and watched the old movies where the police say, you know, drop the gun. They don't seem to do it no more. Now they see you with the gun, and they, I guess they're trained, shoot. And
well,
that's no good.
Well, I think we have to be very careful about gross generalizations, because I'm sure that there have been a lot of incidents where people have been told to drop their weapons. Thanks, RJ. Appreciate it.
Okay,
let's go to Larry in Rhinebeck. Okay, Larry, you're on.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
I'm good so far. Yep.
Oh, you're good so far. Excellent. We're still talking about cameras on cops, right?
Sure, we are, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't think that's a real – I think that was a really quick thing that the president put out. I think that money could be used for education, non-lethal technology, or whatever the case is, because I just think a camera is going to involve – is involved with so many variables, like, you know, the camera or the cop drops it, he's in pursuit, it doesn't work, you know, it's raining, and the picture is, you know, compromised. I don't know. I think it's
Let's assume for a second, Larry, that you're right, that any of those things could happen. Are you better off with whatever you get than with nothing?
Well, I guess. I mean, it's just a tremendous amount of money, and I think it could be used elsewhere, or we could think about it instead of just kind of going to Congress and asking for it.
Okay. Now, you're president of the United States. You're sitting there in the White House. You happen to be black. You happen to know that there's a real problem with police racism in this country. What do you do? You say, okay, we're going to give more money for training. All good. But, you know, I've been around police a lot. And I know that, you know, Freud said character was set at 4. I don't know that this is all going to change overnight. I happen to be a big supporter of the camera idea. I think it's a terrific, short stopgap, but it's not either or. I think you have to be very careful about who you choose, what their psychological profile is, and you have to do the kind of training I know you're talking about here.
And not to mention, three out of four people have a smartphone these days.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just like you could, as simple as putting on the voice recorder and putting it in your coat pocket during just a routine traffic stop.
Yeah, no. You're right. But I have to tell you, in my class the other day, one of my students said that to me. You just turn on the record button and put it in your top pocket. And I said, yeah, well, there are some police in some places who would not take kindly to that.
Right.
It's easy enough to say you could do it. But you're spending a lot of time worrying about what that officer and all of the potential that they have to make up their own minds can do. Give you a ticket, don't give you a ticket, send you on your way, be nice to you, be not so nice to you, tell you to get out of the car, give you an alcohol breathalyzer test or not. A lot of people have real fear of authority. Anyway, listen, Larry, great call. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Alan. I'm good.
Let's go to Jill in Waterford. Okay, Jill, go.
Hi. I don't know if this was brought up before. I came in on the discussion late. Has anyone mentioned anything about when or how the cameras are turned on?
Well, no, I don't know the answer to that, Jill, and it was raised earlier today when we were talking about it on the roundtable this morning. But the answer is...
thinking if they're on 24/7 or what... prevents the cop from not turning it on.
We're talking about technicalities here. Let's assume for a second you can make them work. Whenever the police officer is engaged, something happens. Let's assume
I'm all
that.
For it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get to the
technical
details
stuff.
What's to make sure it's on when it's supposed to be on.
Well, when
I'm
police,
all for it.
You know, when the police officer gets out of the car and there's a camera in the car, it sure as heck turns on. So they've worked that out.
I didn't know how that worked.
But, of course, there's a presumption that if it's not on for some reason and, you know, somebody who's been accused of something says, well, you know, this is the way it happened, and somebody says to the officer, well, how come your camera wasn't on? Did you turn it off? That might make a difference. Jill from Waterford, thank you for your usually good call. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Let's go to Jeremy in Woodstock. Jeremy, you're on.
Hi there, Alan. You got a popular show. I was on hold so long trying to call you, I thought I was trying to win something.
Go ahead.
There's so much really hard to condense. I mean, this is a huge subject. I don't think you're going to be able to deal with there's racism in the world, therefore there's racism in policing. And I think there's, you know, of course it's a difficult conversation to have when large percentage of the population just decides to just willfully be ignorant of the problem. But what you can do is hold people accountable so that it's not a fun job for racists.
Yeah, but how do you hold them accountable? I mean, if you have them on camera, that's one thing. But we know that grand juries don't indict police officers as a rule. They always get the benefit of the doubt, and maybe they should. But, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, there are gaps in the chain of accountability, and I can tell you what I think they are. Yes, the cameras are important. Yes, all these procedures are important, but they only matter. There have been already incidences where cops have turned off or manipulated cameras and audio when they got, you know, caught under circumstances where, you know, somebody is killed and they're unarmed and there's this big question about it. Yeah. It needs to be
That's
a crime.
True. That's true.
Police misconduct needs to be a crime. It needs to be at least a misdemeanor, if not a felony, to tamper with that equipment, number one. Two, you cannot have local prosecutors prosecuting local cops for offenses. This guy in Missouri, in Ferguson, he worked every angle he could to not get an indictment. Anybody who has any courtroom experience will tell you that what he did was malfeasance. And this is going to be a common thing because these people have very tight relationships. They work together. They're on the same team. Number three, and this is a big one, lots of cops have gotten caught and fired for their superiors. You can go up and down the chain of command, and they'll all tell you these people shouldn't be cops. They got drunk and shot somebody off duty. They crashed their cop car when they were drunk. They sexually abused the prisoner, all these things. They get off. The union appeals. They go to arbitration. The arbitration leans heavily in the cops' favor. There are a lot of police on the force all over the country that have already been fired by their own departments or fired and then rehired by other departments because they don't keep track and because the unions have a lot of sway in this.
Jeremy from Woodstock, a very important call. You make a lot of very interesting points, but we have a lot of people behind you, and we're almost out of time. Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
One thing, please.
Yes.
December 13th, 2 p.m., New York City, there's a giant march against police brutality.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Yeah, bye-bye. Let's go to Jerry in Schenectady. Okay, Jerry in Schenectady, you're on. Keep it short.
Hi, Alan. We seem to be ever progressing toward the police state that George Orwell warned us about in 1984, and that was not a desirable scenario. Now, I haven't read the book in decades and don't have a copy of it now, but I think we need to start looking at that as a reference guide again and start considering all the different downsides that he lists in that book. The main one I remember is that we could get a rogue government that could not be challenged. Do you remember some of the other downsides of that book?
I don't remember my kids' names. So,
okay.
No. I do remember the book, but I certainly don't remember specifics. So,
because we always seem to be willing to take that next step. And in this case, I kind of agree that, yes, policemen should have cameras on there. But we need to start talking about where are the limits going to be in the future. We're always willing to take the next step. But where would the footage be held of this? In the police stations?
Let's assume for a second that that's, you know, as I said before, I guess, Jill, that can be handled later on. You can raise those questions. They're legitimate to be raised. But still, let's assume that you say to the police department, it's your job to get these films, and it is your job to keep them, and that we will hold you responsible for that. If cops have as much power as they do, Jerry, and they are the judge and jury right there, standing by the curb with you. Then it seems to me that cameras are a very good thing because it puts them in a spot where they are a cop and not everything else.
But would you and I have access to it?
You mean if it happened to you, if Jerry was standing on the corner and a cop was abusive, you would think the first thing your lawyer would do say, I want to see that tape.
Right. And so that's a crucial question.
Well, sure.
Yeah, or the news media.
Okay. So. Hey, Jerry, thanks for the call. Appreciate
thanks,
it. Yeah.
Bye.
All right. Let's go to Jim in Albany. Jim in Albany, you're on.
Hey, hello, Alan.
Hey.
I wonder if some of the people in Missouri have attitudes that go back to the Civil War or the year 1820 when Missouri came into the Union as a slave state.
Could be.
Takes a long time to change these attitudes, don't they?
Well, we do see quite a pronounced divide between North and South still to this very day.
Yeah,
and when Lyndon Johnson got the Civil Rights Act passed, the Voting Rights Act passed, he said, I've just lost the South.
Yeah. I would like to see the police represent the community and be recruited from the community. That would be the fundamental change we need to make right now, don't you think?
Yeah, but how do you do it?
Well, I think the president is talking about recruiting more people from the communities in which the...
But how do you do it? Right now, and I know lots of cases of this, you have civil service departments, you have tests. Now, if people in the minority communities are undereducated, are not treated well when it comes to pre-K and all the rest of that stuff, how are they going to get on a police force?
Well, I think if we had good leaders, which we do in many communities, we would have an enlightened police force.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Paul in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, Paul, you're on.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. Here I am. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I pretty much agree with Jeremy. I thought his comments were pretty good. So my comment is more of a consideration. Like, so what if we didn't allow beat cops or patrol officers to carry firearms?
The English model. The British model.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there are other countries that do that.
Right.
And, you know, if Darren Wilson didn't have a gun, Michael Brown would probably, you know, I'm not going to say absolutely yes, but he probably would be alive today.
Well, what if, just for the sake of argument, and I don't want to make this argument, but what if Darren Wilson was right, that he had been attacked, that his life was in danger? Was he better off with a gun or not?
Yeah. What? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of think that, I mean, he was unarmed to begin with, so that, you know, Officer Wilson should be able to observe that, I guess. And, you know, violent crime has gone down a whole lot since the 70s and 80s. So I think maybe we ought to reevaluate.
You made your point. And I just want to take a few more calls and get off because we're...
Hypothetically.
Yeah. No, you made a point. I got it. I got your point.
Sorry, I think my signal's a little weak here or something.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Eliza in East Hampton. Eliza, go quick.
Hi, Alan. My point is that police officers and these communities are both traumatized groups.
Yep.
Communities from racism and poverty and everything else. Police officers from being trained to work in a potentially dangerous situation all the time. Their job is to walk around and look for potentially dangerous things and interpret things as dangerous that maybe are not to everybody.
Yep. Yep.
So I think that there needs to be a lot more focus on community policing. These policemen should know their communities. They should know the individuals. They should have personal relationships with them. They should be walking around, and they should be getting training on self-care, how to manage the stresses of the job, how people naturally categorize people, and they have to be completely self-aware of that in order to guard against
Eliza,
you know, racial profiling and everything else.
You're all good points, but no more time.
Thank you, Alan.
Very much. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks, everything. Yeah. Bye.
I want to thank Jacob from Belchertown and Mitch from Albany. Mitch makes the point that there are Fifth Amendment considerations here when you're talking about cameras. And Jacob from Belchertown says everybody should read the ACLU report on body cameras. We're just about out of time, and I do apologize to those folks. Support for Vox Pop comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, over 275 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic Protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/Vox Pop. Our engineer's superb job that he's doing is Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, Esquire. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update, and thank you all for a wonderful program. Much appreciated.